Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 12th. I'm Ray Graff. It's historic radio today on the program as we welcome back Rich Guthrie to the show. He hasn't been here in some time, and we welcome him back with open arms. If you have a question about birds, give us a call right now. If perhaps there's a winged creature you'd like to identify, well, maybe you have a song that you could sing for us over the phone. We'd love that. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. Historic radio straight ahead right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today on the show, and we welcome back our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie, to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Our number to call if you have a bird question is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, I didn't realize you were actually on the show when I was on vacation.
Yeah, I'm sorry you missed it.
So it's not that historic of a program. It's not the big
comeback
show. Well,
it will be.
Well, I'm sure it'll be
We
great.
Have time to make history here.
But it's as Rich Guthrie appearances go, there. It's not like it's been 3 or 4 months since you've been on.
No.
All right. Well, all right.
But here we are. We'll make up for lost time.
We'll do it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. What's new with you?
Autumn
is new for you.
Autumn is in the air.
All right.
Have you noticed?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
I did. And we see different things with the birds at that time.
Yes. We mostly see them leaving.
But some stay.
Oh, yeah. And some have yet to arrive.
You know, we had an email here earlier today, much earlier in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. It said the subject heading was hummingbirds. It was from Joanne in Ballston Spa.
Uh-huh.
And she writes, after feeding them since May, most of my little hummingbirds are already gone. It seems like they all left at once. Can you tell me how far south these fascinating little creatures go?
Yes. First of all, they're not all gone. I'm sorry yours left already. I'm assuming that's because you took such good care of them. But there's still a lot of them still around.
Yeah.
Keep the hummingbird feeders going.
Okay.
And be sure to keep in mind to plant some favorite flowers for next spring and summer. But with that in mind, they go clear down to Mexico and beyond, to Costa Rica, Brazil.
Hmm.
They're incredible, incredible birds, the tiny little things that they are. You know, there was the old country tale that the hummingbirds hitched a ride on the back of geese. Because nobody could believe they could do all that flying on their own.
A bird like that. How far do they get in a night or a day?
It depends on the weather and their mood. In the springtime, they're a lot quicker to get back home than they are in the winter. And they're kind of like working their way down.
Mm.
In the spring, they're anxious to get back. And so they go clear down to Texas, across the Gulf of Mexico, down into the Yucatan, and then down through Mexico, down into Central and South America.
Hmm. Now, Joanne's follow-up is an interesting one. She says, if they survive the winter, will the same ones come back?
Yes.
How do you know?
Because they may come back year after year.
How long do they live?
Well, not very long. A bird life expectancy is about proportional to its size, roughly speaking. Smaller birds, shorter time. Larger birds, longer time.
Mm.
But hummingbirds seem to break that mold a little bit because they are so small. That formula wouldn't do them very well. But they'll last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And once they get through the first year. The first year is a critical one. But
will they come back to the same spot? Will they come back to Joanne's feeder?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. And we know that because very dedicated people are out there tagging them and monitoring their comings
now,
and goings.
How the heck do you catch and tag a hummingbird, Rich Guthrie?
Well, it's done by experts who know how to handle the birds, the tiny little things that they are. But there is a very tiny little band that you can put on their leg, and it has a serial number on it, just like a car license plate. And off they go. When it comes back, you capture that same bird. You got documented proof
that
bird was here before and is back again. and maybe caught, found down in South Carolina or Louisiana on its way south or back north.
Speaking of South Carolina, before we get to the phones, at 800-348-2551, huge storm about to hit the Carolina coast. Will that displace a lot of those birds? Will we see some funny ones up our way?
Yeah, it will. It will push birds around, no question about it. And devastating as these things are, both in terms of human terms and wildlife and agriculture and the birds. So, yeah, you get 110-mile, 115-mile-an-hour wind. Many of the birds have the ability to hunker down. They better find themselves a good, safe place. But so many of them are vulnerable to this sort of annual disturbance. But through the course of time, they have adapted to work around this. Some of them can feel the change in air pressure, can move on, avoid an area, but so many do succumb.
That was my question. It seems in folk wisdom that many animals have a sixth sense, if you will, of impending bad weather, and they'll get the heck out of Dodge. True, not true?
Probably half true.
Yeah,
half true. I think the more likely thing is that they'll quiet down. They'll find a place to hang out, and the unlucky ones will get caught up at the wrong time at the wrong. This happens to a lot of our shorebirds, the sandpipers that leave from the high Arctic, fly out over the Atlantic nonstop to some of the Caribbean islands or South America. If they get caught out in between Nova Scotia and Bermuda, they're in trouble.
There's no place to hide out there.
There is not. And it's also birds that live their whole life out at sea that don't come to shore except to maybe to build a nest on an island in the South Atlantic.
Yeah.
They too are out there and exposed to these events. But through time, they have evolved. You know, a seabird can just settle in the water and, duck under a wave a 70-foot wave. They can, skirt around it somehow. But they do end up in strange places. I remember years ago, we had the hurricane sweep by here, and a lot of tropical seabirds were found on lawns in Del Mar, New York.
Really?
Yep. And just a few years ago, a tropic bird was found in the mountains just at the Massachusetts-New York border, at the Petersburg, New York area.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. We talk birds today on the program, and the number is 800-348-2551. We go over to John in Canaan. John, you're first.
Thank you very much. Rich, I'm so glad you're back. The last time I called you, I was wanting to talk about a ruffed grouse that seemed to have fallen in love with my lawnmower.
Aha, uh-huh. Yes.
But this time, I'd like to talk to you about a cardinal that for over a month and a half seemed focused on my bedroom window from between the hours and about 6 to 9 o'clock in the morning. Every day for over a month and a half, this bird attacked my window. Either directly head on or else sometimes from the bottom of the ground up, sideways, any way you could imagine. I mean, I began to think that maybe this bird was a reincarnation of some relative who had an axe to grind. I had never seen such behavior. And I'm just kind of wondering whether it seems to have sloughed off now. It woke me up in the morning for a good deal of the summer. I'm just wondering if you ever heard of anything like this before. Do you have any idea what might have been going on?
Well, nothing personal, John. It's not you.
It's thank you.
It's all about himself, actually. It's
all right.
This is a male cardinal that believes in another male cardinal invading his territory. Every time he shows up at your window, there that other bird is. And so what his job is to do is to drive that other cardinal out of his territory and voila, waking you up during the process. Mm-hmm. So
he was seeing a reflection in the window is what you're saying.
That's as simple as that, yes.
But even if I covered up the window I thought that might be the case. And so I covered the window with a curtain. It still happened.
Well, if you covered the window on the inside, that probably it perhaps increased the reflection that he's seeing the mirror image on the outside. So all you did was make his rival stronger. You didn't make his life any easier for him.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and as soon as the nesting season is over, he settles down and moves on. But it's all about territory, protecting his realm.
And it's an amusing sight to see, but it's also serious to some extent.
Well, that's his job. And it does take him away from some of his other duties, like the real cardinal, who's on the other side of the territory, making inroads, encroaching on his turf. And also taking care of mama, they have to feed the babies too.
Yeah. Our guest today is Rich Guthrie. The number is 800-348-2551 on this bird show. And Stephen in Glens Falls. Stephen.
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Rich, I have a question about a bird call.
Well, good.
We live in the Glens Falls area and have a rather large backyard that's surrounded by woods. Over the summer, there has been, I'm assuming it is a single bird. It could be more than one of the same species, that gives out a call that is a sequence of four separate sounding calls. It's always the same sequence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not multiple birds because it's so repeated. I've recorded it.
Ooh.
I'll try to play it on the phone. Hopefully it'll go through. We're curious as to whether someone can identify what it is.
This is great.
While you're doing that, while you're getting it up, I'm going to show a picture to Ray.
Okay.
And
well,
I'm going to guess
already
in advance what it is. But go ahead.
Okay.
We'll see how.
All right. Here it comes.
Go ahead. Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Did it come through?
Yeah, you gave me a seizure, but we're all set.
He'll be all right. Don't worry. Okay, I'm going to suggest it was a mockingbird. At first, I thought maybe it was going to be a hermit thrush because they have, and in the Glens Falls area, either one of them is possible. But the hermit thrush has a pattern that it often follows sequentially.
Yeah.
And it's rather, each phrase is distinctive. The mockingbird is more random, so I'm a little bit puzzled by that. And in fact, I might be totally wrong.
Yeah.
But that's the best I can come out of that so far.
Well, that's exciting, though. Hey, listen.
And what was the second bird? A hermit what?
A hermit thrush.
Hermit thrush.
It's a beautiful, beautiful song. That didn't sound so beautiful, though.
Well,
so
I think
it really might have been
the recording. Hey, we have to take a break here, Stephen, but good luck. If you can get a picture of that, send it to us at the show. It's 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. Birds, and we'll get back to the calls in a moment. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Birds today with Rich Guthrie. 800-348-2551 is the number. Susan writes, I was hoping it would be birds today. And the subject heading is hawks. I live in the Great Barrington area. It seems like there are many more hawks and possibly turkey vultures around than I remember in years past. I've seen them standing by the side of the road, flying both low and way overhead and in fields. Am I making the correct identifications? Are they more abundant than in past years? Why is this?
The answer is yes and yes. Turkey vultures have come into the neighborhood in a vengeance. They're here and in numbers. The other newcomer in town is the black vulture. Right on the tail of the turkey vulture, the black vultures have moved in. And in fact, in some areas, they're even more numerous than the turkey vulture. And then also the red-tailed hawk has been experienced a wonderful, an incredible population boom.
Why?
Habitat and also available food. It's all about food and places to nest.
Mm.
And they've become very adapted at nesting in more, let's say, marginal areas than in the past. So you'll actually find them nesting on buildings in the city, on power poles in a suburban area, and also on the woodlot where traditionally will nest. So both the red-tailed hawk, which is very conspicuous when it's out perched in the open, and the turkey vultures overhead also very conspicuous.
All right, this one is from Ellen. There are hawks and falcons living in my neighborhood in Albany, and I'd like to attract them to my yard so they'll eat the squirrels and rabbits that have invaded my garden. I have a couple of trees that are easily 80 feet tall, and I'd like to build a nest for them. What would such a nest look like, and what should I think about when building and installing it?
Forget about it.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Why?
They're on their own. They'll do it themselves. If it's going to happen, it's up to them. They don't take to your helping hand.
So they don't like man-made nests?
No, they're not interested. They have to go through the ritual of doing it themselves. Now, some birds, like the screech owl, which I highly recommend, you can actually build a nest box, a birdhouse for them. And they may, kind of unlikely in a city setting, but they are there, and they are in the city. In fact, I know in Albany, New York, down in Washington Park, screech owls. And in some of the other city parks, there are, and along the streets with the shade trees. Screech owls are there. You can build a box. You can go online and find the plan for a screech owl nest box. It will be the same plan as for a wood duck nest box. And go for it. See what happens.
All right. And then Ellen wants to know if there's a good resource for more questions when Rich is not on the radio.
Hardly.
Nice. Well, isn't that arrogant? Do you have an email address? Might be a better answer.
Yeah, sure. It's richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
All right, richardpguthrie@gmail.com. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Pete in Albany. Pete, you're on.
Good afternoon. I have a question about a bird I hear in my neighborhood here. I live next to some woods. There's a bird that sounds like the old rope and pulley clothesline, just sort of like a screeching, sort of a rusty sound like that, or like an old water pump, hand-cranked water pump. Is there any bird in this area that would sound like that?
Yeah, two come to mind. One is actually called the rusty blackbird, and it sounds like a creaky, rusty gate hinge. That said, they're not really around here that much. They're kind of rare. And they don't nest in the area. They nest well to the north. They move through during the spring and summer.
Mm-hmm.
But they do live up to their name, both and in appearance, too. They look like they've been out in the rain too long. The other one is the blue jay. And the blue jay has this marvelous repertoire. And and part of that includes this rusty clothesline, or the squeaky clothesline sound. And a little squeakier than that.
You think that's it, Pete?
I think the first one may, well, you know, the rust, it sounds more like the rusty blackbird.
Okay, well, like Ray said, get pictures, because we're very concerned about the rusty blackbird. We do want, and I will put a plug here to enter bird sightings onto eBird at the Cornell University website, interactive site for recording bird observations, ebird.org. No cost. It's free to use, and it, in fact, you can extract a lot of information. And getting back to your previous question, there is a good site at Cornell called that Cornell has about bird questions and what bird.
Ah,
yes.
So you can start at eBird and follow the links.
Yeah, go to Cornell and eBird.org.
Now,
yeah.
If Pete wants to upload audio, can you do that on eBird?
Oh yes, in fact, that's one of the tools that we use for identifying some of the bird reports that are submitted to eBird.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks,
yes, sir. Pete.
We
thank you.
We appreciate it very much. Over to Scott in East Hampton. Scott.
Yes, Rich. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
It's mine too.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. Oh, great.
We're here.
I have a question on what I believe to be barred owls.
Okay.
We camp through the summer months, and we're there on the weekends. We do have some owls in the campground, but this past year here, somewhere around June, July, we heard all this screeching going on. Screech, high-pitched screeching. And so when we started to look around with the flashlights, it was owls, three and four at a time, in the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And no hooting whatsoever, just all screech, screech, screech. They go from tree to tree, tree to tree. This went on for maybe 4 to 5 weeks, and it all disappeared.
Okay, well, I'm going to assume that these were larger than small owls.
They were not small. I do have pictures of them. That's why I believe the research that I've done would lead me to believe they're barred.
Yes, and it's very likely. Barred owls are not uncommon in the area, especially in the habitat you described, the wooded area around the camp, the barred owl. And they will. It probably was a family group of nest mates, or siblings, teenagers out there cavorting back and forth, just jockeying around for the best position to get the next meal.
Yeah.
And competitive. It's competitive in nature on their part, also a learning experience. The other owl that I was thinking about would have been the screech owl, which is kind of misnamed because it really doesn't screech that much. It will, the babies will, but the owl really doesn't. It's more like the whinny owl. But in any event, the barred owl is probably, you probably have it identified correctly. A family group of barred owls would be likely.
Okay, so could it be the young ones fledging?
Yes, the young ones out there just making a racket to draw attention to themselves. Mom and Dad, you know, I'm over here. Feed me.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, I've been waiting quite a while to get in touch with you, and I'm glad you answered my question.
Well, you're welcome to share the pictures if you like. They're sending them on to that
eBird.
eBird or my Gmail address.
And what is your Gmail address again?
My name, Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
All right, Scott, thanks for the call. Over to Sue in Hopewell Junction. Sue.
Hi, I'm going to talk about hummingbirds also. Mine have not left. They're feeding generously.
Atta girl.
Yes, they've been here since, I think, May, and they always come back to the same place. I have not seen a single male all summer long, yet there are more birds than ever. Am I missing something?
Nope. The males tend to be standoffish. What is more likely is a female and the young. The young will look like females. It may be young males, but they'll be virtually identical to the females in plumage. So, but the adult males, you know, they're kind of out there in the periphery.
But, why?
Didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not that they're shy. They're very bold. And he's out there standing guard, let's say, on the corner lot.
I see.
But I'm happy to say I have an adult male coming to my feeder, and boy, is he ever tenacious.
Really?
Yeah, I'll be standing there, and he doesn't bother about my being there at all.
Hmm.
But I also have a yard full of flowers that they love.
They love bee balm, don't they?
They love bee balm. They love
they do.
Jewel leaf.
Go ahead, Sue.
I can't remember whether it was you who said if you ever see two sitting on little prongs on the feeder, it's been photoshopped. Was that you?
No.
Because they really fight one another.
They do. The ruby-throated hummingbird, our native hummingbird, is very territorial and very aggressive and very intolerant. Young siblings will sit side by side nearby one another, but the adults, not so much.
Mm, interesting.
But out west, there's a hummingbird where a dozen will swarm at a feeder in the southwest. They get along quite well.
Oh, very interesting.
So some of those pictures are of that western species.
Well, thank you, Sue.
I'm watching them now. Thank you.
Okay, and keep the hummingbird feeders going. Don't let up, even if there are none around at the moment. There are still some coming down from Quebec. You can tell by their accent. And then there will be some coming in from the west. And then later in the season, you get these vagrants that come up from the southwest. Mm. They get their compass turned around, and here they are. They're more than welcome to like a feeder.
But you say the ruby-throated, which is common in this area,
mm-hmm.
not a real happy neighbor with his fellow...
No, they don't get along.
What about, say, you've seen those hummingbird moths?
Oh, yeah.
Will they get along with them? Will
they
know the
no
difference?
Attention to them.
They won't even pay
them? Nah, they'll try to push them aside so they can get at that flower instead.
Because, you know, at first glance, those moths, you say, oh, there's a hummingbird.
Very convincing.
Yeah. But
and
not to the
fact,
hummingbirds.
Not a lot of times. But sometimes we'll get reports of a peculiar hummingbird, and it'll turn out to be the insect.
Interesting. Over to Jack in Glenville. Jack.
Yo.
You're on.
Okay.
Jack.
Hello.
Yo.
Yeah, hello there.
All right.
Listen, I had something unusual happen in the beginning of the summer, is that I put out my bird seed, and then on either side of the bird feeder, I hang a hunk of suet.
Yeah.
and it says, you know, won't melt. But I have been invaded by sparrows. I mean, they were coming 15, 20 at a time all over the place.
They are that way, aren't
Every
they?
Every time I filled the feeder, they'd come in. I mean, and I usually see chickadees. I have seen no finches this year. I think I may have seen a couple of goldfinches towards maybe a couple of weeks ago.
Well, but Jack, I pity you. That's unfortunate because those sparrows are going to stick around. Those are likely house sparrows.
Yeah.
What we used to call English sparrows back in the day.
And they push
they're very aggressive. And the thing is that they do hang out in a mob, a gang. And that's what they do. They sort of like gang up, and not intentionally, but it's just intimidating for the little song sparrow, the chipping sparrow, to see 15 or 20 house sparrows come swarming in. They all fly together at once.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they'll even
push
them.
Can you discourage them in some way?
It's hard to do. Once they've found a pathway to your door, they love you.
The fake owls don't work.
Okay, one other thing, Richard.
Sure.
Thanks, God, for this program. I love it.
Hey.
Do you have any comments on putting the suet out in the summer?
No, I do it all the time.
And
the real suet, not the fake stuff, not the. But you can get, actually, they do have the suet cakes that you can now buy that are prepared suet combinations, and they work too. What doesn't do well is fat scraps or trimmings or stuff like that. I mean, the birds love it.
But
stuff will render.
Ah.
Yes. Okay, I'm glad I'm doing the right thing again.
You are, Jack, and
we love it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jack. We appreciate it. So there is such a thing as imitation suet.
Well, it's not imitation, but it's sort of like a composite of stuff. It's like scrapple of suet world.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, there are any number of directions we can go. Just leave it alone. Bill in Andover. Bill, you're on.
Hi there, folks. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I live across from a lake, and we have a lot of interesting birds. This morning I went down to look at the water. It was misting a little bit, and I couldn't believe, but I saw a mourning dove fly into the lake. I'm looking out there, and I said, well, it's obviously not a duck. It's very small, and it was making the patented mourning dove song, and then it started going across the lake, kind of bobbing up and down like it didn't want to be in the water. It eventually made its way to the shore close to me, but I couldn't see it. Have you experienced that before?
Nope.
Huh.
Nope. Are you sure it was a dove? I'm just curious because there are small birds that may look like a dove at a distance that are actually some sort of a water bird. And things like the phalarope, for example, which is a sandpiper that is quite happy swimming in the water. The red phalarope is quite gray in appearance, and at a distance without, you know, a close good look at it, might be mistaken for a dove.
But will it sound the same?
No, the sound part throws me off. Now, I'm just wondering, did the bird in the water make the sound that you were hearing, or was it something else nearby coincidental? But I'm...
Yeah, there was nothing else. It was very quiet and nobody around, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and then it flew out of the water.
Well, yeah.
Now, it did have a white tip on the end of the wing, and does the mourning dove have that?
Nope.
What would you think, Rich? White tip on the end of the wing.
Well, I'm gonna go with perhaps a gull. One of the very small Bonaparte's gull will look like a dove. In fact, it has a very dove-like appearance to it. The sound, now, first of all, a mourning dove, if it were a mourning dove in the water, it would not likely be singing or cooing or doing anything like that. It's certainly not a cry for help. They want to, a mourning dove has no business being in the water and it'd be totally unhappy doing it. And singing will not be in its mind at the moment. So
it did make the sound. I wouldn't say it was actually singing, but what threw me was the bird did not look like it wanted to be in the water either, because instead of swimming, it was bobbing almost like it was trying to get out of the water, and that threw me a little bit too.
Well, I'm going to have to reach and guess and assume that, first of all, I'm going to assume that it was not a mourning dove. If it was a mourning dove, it had a problem. And go with the gull. It could have been feeding on something and, pecking away or dabbling in the water to get whatever the food might have been. Unfortunately, okay. if you might have gotten a picture, that would have been a great resource, but I'm at a loss for that. A mourning dove. I'm going to go with a gull or other natural waterborne.
All right.
Bird species.
Not waterborne. That's a different show.
Waterborne.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. It's a no waterboarding zone here on the program. We'll be back with more calls in a moment. Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie's here, boys and girls. The number is 800-348-2551. It's the Bird Show today, and one of my favorite segments on this program when Rich is here is when Rich recounts his list of events coming up in our region. I listen attentively. It's all yours, Rich.
Okay, right. Pay attention here. Here's a good one. You know, so many people enjoy hosting bluebirds in their yard.
Yeah, yeah.
With bluebird nest houses and the like, and many more would like to do so, or even just to see a bluebird. Well, now you can. You can learn about these or how to do it better. Share and learn as well as observe to your heart's content. That'll be at the New York State Bluebird Society's annual meeting, which will be at the Albany Pine Bush on September 22nd.
Okay.
Check it out. NYSBS.org, New York State Bluebird Society.org, or you can check out the Albany Pine Bush website for the upcoming events.
Excellent.
That's September 22nd. Then I'll be doing a couple of programs. I have one called The Birds and the Trees. This is a four-part program, one indoor, three outdoors, and this is with the Greenland Trust, beginning September 21st. You can find out about that at greenlandtrust.org. And that's green with an extra E.
Mm. Oh, Green County, like Green
County. As in Green County, yes.
Yes.
And then on the 29th of September, Nassau Public Library, I'll be doing a morning talk. And on September 30th, the next day, I'll be doing a morning walk. This is at the Nassau, New York Public Library over in Rensselaer County.
Terrific.
Yeah, be there. Lots of things going on. In the fall, the birders come out from their estivation, and there are all sorts of things happening. Everybody in the world is scheduling field trips or outings or meetings and show-to and how-to. I recommend that you go online in your local area and check the local bird club, the Audubon Society or the Bird Club or the Natural History Society. And see what's going on. There's so many things. It's too many to list.
Right.
And, Ray, it'd be hard to keep up with it. But I'm going to say check out your neighborhood for the Bird Club, the Audubon Society, or the Natural History Society, and look at their field trip and program schedule.
Terrific idea. Now, when you have a four-part presentation coming up.
I do.
How long does it take you to put that together?
Oh,
it's a lot of work, right?
Oh, listen, it's a labor of love.
But
the birds
extensive.
And the trees.
Yeah.
You know, I went to the College of Forestry, so I got to know a little bit about the trees, too. And we talk about both. And birds like trees.
Birds like trees. This one came in via email from Gene in Saugerties. Hi, Richard. Ray, love the show. How common is a Cooper's hawk in a residential neighborhood? I had two earlier this summer. Today, one sat on my clothes pole with his back to me for about 15 minutes.
They are not common, but they are there.
Yeah.
They are Cooper's and Sharp-Shin Hawk, but virtually identical. One is the large sort of version of the other.
Yeah.
Separate species, of course, but both of them have learned that city and suburban areas have lots of little birds around, especially Jack Sparrows. So that'd be one way to take care of that.
Yeah.
And, it can happen. And also, they're also less afraid. They're less wary than some of the other hawk species.
All right, this one came in from Angela. I listened to a garden podcast that someone called in very, very concerned about new sticky strips that are being sold to get rid of the spotted lanternfly. And that spotted lanternfly was in the news today.
Yeah.
It's wreaking havoc in Pennsylvania. It's been sighted in Albany County.
Scary.
The caller said that they have rescued multiple birds, woodpeckers, nuthatches, even a Cooper's hawk. Just would love for you to address this so people understand what's happening. And that's from Angela.
Yeah, sometimes you got to be very careful of the cure. I would discourage the use of sticky strips for that purpose whatsoever.
Okay.
I've gone on and I've looked at the Pennsylvania Agriculture Department. They have a wonderful informational page on that invasive insect. Very dangerous. We can't let it survive. We can't let it flourish. And so learn about it and remove it.
We have a lot of calls here. And a couple of emails that are very long. I'm going to paraphrase here so we can move it along here. This one is from Jessica in New Paltz. And Jessica's question, basically, the red-headed woodpeckers and red-bellied woodpeckers, are these two breeds territorial? And could the red-headed woodpecker have pushed the red-bellied out of my yard?
No.
No?
No. They are territorial, but the red-headed more so is can tolerate small colonies. And in the New Paltz area, there are two small colonies of red-headed woodpeckers, different species, and this one really lives up to its name.
Okay.
So but they don't cohabit.
All right. Another one on hummingbirds here from Patty, and then we'll get back to the phones. This is Patty in Queensbury, and she writes, I've tried to sustain a hummingbird feeder this summer and did get some wonderful hummingbirds until the squirrels found the feeder. The squirrels belly up to the bar, drain the hummingbird feeder. I tried petroleum jelly and hot pepper flakes on their approach. It didn't bother them at all. Any thoughts on how to keep the squirrels away from the feeder?
I would try various tricks of relocating the feeder, make it more difficult. The hummingbirds can fly to the feeder. The squirrels have to crawl their way to it. So if you have an overhanging branch, you can hang the feeder from the branch itself, raise and lower it with a string as one suggestion.
Clothesline?
Clothesline. Again, you got to make it difficult for the squirrels to get out there. They have to walk their way out.
What if you put a hummingbird feeder on a drone and just let it hover in your backyard?
Try it. Let's see what happens.
That's your homework for the next show, Rich Guthrie.
Well, we'll see.
All right, let's go to Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Lynn.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. Well, kind of two. I get banding here every year from the people who do that. And this last year we caught a red start, a female red start. And I'm wondering, do they not come to the feeders? What do they eat?
They do not. Red starts are a type of a warbler bird species. And they're, for the most part, insect eaters. And as a rule, they will not come. Most warblers will not come to a feeder. Every now and then, one will investigate. They'll see the finches having a good old time. And warblers, any bird is curious and to see if there's anything in that for them. And
yes.
Sometimes we'll have overwintering birds that will discover a suet feeder, and they're so desperate and need that protein that they will adapt to the suet feeder quite well. But for the most part, the warblers aren't drawn to feeders.
Okay, Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. We go over to Diana in Shushan. Diana.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I have a horse barn, an old horse barn, that every year I keep track of the barn swallows when they arrive in April and when they leave. And usually they leave mid-September. This year they all left. They always come all together and leave all together, and they all left in the middle of August, the whole month early, and I don't know why.
Well, that's happened around, and you're not the first to bring this up, but I have a question for you. Have you noticed any difference in their numbers this year compared to previous years?
They were a little down this year.
A little down. That's also what people have been relating. Now, I can't answer your question definitively, but I think it's all about food and the urge to get out there and migrate. So it is unusual. The swallows, especially the barn swallows, have been experiencing some strange goings-ons these last few years. And it's something to keep an eye on, and this is where eBird becomes a valuable resource, a tool to monitor this sort of population distribution shifts and numbers.
All right. Diana, thanks so much for the call. Over to Steve in South Cambridge. Steve, you're on.
Yeah, my question is about a mystery call in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking it's a food begging cry of an owl,
mm-hmm.
but I commonly have great horned owls doing food begging, and I know that call, and I see them frequently. But all during the month of July and the month of August, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, it's a single call, and what distinguishes it, it has no raspy quality at all. It's about a second long, maybe every minute or so, and just a nice pure note, but no raspy quality to it at all. And I've gone through all the owls online listening. You know, we have lots of barred owls around here, lots of screech owls. But there, everything I hear online doesn't sound like what I'm hearing.
Well, have you checked out the long-eared owl?
You know, that's the one I've been wondering about.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, it's so secretive.
It is. It is, yeah. Exactly that. And I think there's the long-eared owl is sometimes called the cat owl, not only because it looks like a cat at times, but also because it sounds like a cat at times. And there are other mystery sounds that the long-eared owl will make. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, they are very secretive. You can walk by a dozen of them and not know
really?
It. Easily. They have a way of scrunching up against the tree trunk and looking like a flake of bark. Huh. Big as they are, they just disappear.
Well, quickly, can you make the sound? I know we have many calls here.
Well, they have such a variety of sounds, and some of them, would sound terrible over the microphone.
Yeah.
Because
well,
it'll scare the cats and kids.
Okay.
So we don't want to do that.
Well, Steve, that's a good one to investigate anyway. Thanks for the call. And we go to Buzz. Hello, Buzz in Eagle Mills.
Hey, I was just looking at my Peterson guide, and when they described hummingbirds, they said pugnacious, which cracked me up.
Good word.
Couple things. Towards the end of last winter, I saw what I thought was a goshawk.
Mm-hmm.
On the ground under some trees near a hedgerow, and it looked like he was definitely eating something. Some crows came in and were bugging him, but I went out there to check it out, and it looked like there was a gray colored fur in the area. Will they pick off a squirrel?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. Then the other thing I observed was this early summer I was driving out the back roads in the hills of Rensselaer County, and I saw this cat flying across a dirt road in the dark in my high beams, and he hit a log and went catapulting into the woods. And then there were two just above in the high beam, in the lights above from my car. I saw these two light brown birds flying along. I'm assuming they were owls, and they were hunting that cat, I think. Do you have any idea what owls they might have been?
Well, at high beams at night, can make any dark bird look white.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yes. And
you're like
so,
Shakespeare. And, good Lord.
Going from there on, I suspect it would have to be a large owl. And
There was two of them. They were hunting together.
Yeah, probably not together. One was trying to outrace the other one for an easy meal. So keep the cats indoors, number one. And the other one is probably a great horned owl or in the wintertime a snowy owl. But either one is a possibility.
All right, Buzz. Thanks a lot for the call. Quickly, we'll zip over here and try to get to as many calls as we can. Jay in Hyde Park. Jay.
There's this bird I hear it sometimes in the day, but I heard it at night, and it was really dark out, and it's unusual to hear birds at night. I'll try to make a sound, see what it sounds like.
Okay.
Okay, well, that's a very good but somewhat weak imitation of the Bob White call.
Ah. Bob White.
Lives up to its name.
Sure.
It says its name.
Right.
Bob White is not native to the area. They are frequently released by people who raise them as a hobby or a pet or a 4-H project. And they let them go into the woods, and they don't last very long.
But do they make noise at night?
Yeah, they probably very lonesome Bob White.
Oh.
They are gregarious, and they do. You know, during the season, they will.
Okay.
Sing through the night.
Jay, does that work for you?
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for the call. And to Betsy in Pittsfield. Betsy.
Yes. Hello. How are you?
Good.
That's good. This is my first time calling. And so thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
We love it.
I just wanted to tag. Excuse me?
Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to tag on to the question about birds knowing whether storms are coming and trying to get an early start ahead of the storm.
Yeah.
In October of 2013, I was in Lenox, and I had a Susie digital camera with just a regular lens on it around my neck, and it was a perfectly clear blue sky. And I looked up in the sky, and probably at about 10,000 feet high, this weird-looking white cloud was traveling across the sky. Well, it wasn't a white cloud. It ended up being about 465 snow geese flying at about 10,000 feet high.
Yep.
I got a picture of it and sent it to Rene Laubach, and he's the one that put it up on a big screen and told me what they were and how many.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like that night or the next morning on the news, there was a storm coming from the Hudson Bay down to us. So they were getting ahead of the storm.
Oh, interesting.
Well, they were, and they were taking advantage of that front that was moving through. Snow geese nest in the high Arctic in winter in the Chesapeake and down in through the Carolinas into the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
And they like a good tailwind like that, and that tailwind is what will bring in that storm as well.
Yeah. I love to show the picture, and I can email it to you.
I'd be happy. Yes.
You'll see it was a perfectly clear blue sky. And then the V formations that they were making at the time when I got the picture, it looks like mountaintops. And a lot of people, that's what they think it is. It's like, how did you get a picture of a mountaintop in the middle of the sky?
So, Rich, your email address one more time?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com, and that's P as in Peter.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. Betsy, thank you for the call. Quickly over to Mike in Saratoga. Mike, you have about a minute here.
Okay, I'll do quick, and Rich can talk the rest of the time.
Okey-doke.
I always pass by the Montezuma Wildlife Refuge. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips? Do you have an estimate of how much time it would take to go through there? I've never been there. And any how long the take and what time of year?
Okay, I recommend it. Montezuma is a national wildlife refuge, the one you go through as you're driving along the thruway on your way from Syracuse towards Buffalo, mm-hmm. Rochester area. And you can get off the thruway at that next exit, loop around, and go through the refuge headquarters. And I would say, the temptation to take longer, but you can do the loop in about 1 hour, get back on the highway, and be on your way. But you really won't want to take longer because there's so many opportunities to stop and observe.
Okay, great. Thanks, Rich.
What sort of birds will we see there?
Mainly water birds because it is a large natural glacial deposit, swampland,
marshland. And you just drive through it? Don't the birds get annoyed by the vehicles?
No, a car makes a very good observation blind. More so, in fact, they don't want you to get out of your car. And you can see lots right from the car windows.
Well, Rich Guthrie, we are out of time, sir. Once again, your email address is?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
We'll be back on the regular schedule and see you in a month or so.
Regular as usual.
Thank you, sir. Support comes from Act Smart New York, Saratoga Springs, offering individualized outpatient counseling and Suboxone treatment for opioid use disorder and medical treatment for alcohol problems. ActSmartNewYork.com. Fall Crafts at Lyndhurst. 3 days, 300 artists on the grounds of the Lyndhurst Estate in Tarrytown. Shopping, gourmet foods, family activities, craft demonstrations, more. September 14th through 16th, artrider.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years. QFCC.com. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York. Working on land protection projects that safeguard the water quality of Lake George. Hiking maps, public events, and more at lglc.org. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for being here. Thank you for calling. Sorry if we didn't get to your calls. We got to a bunch of them today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Carol Lapani. And our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on this program at 2 o'clock, we will have a special edition of the Writers Forum, this time with a focus on songwriting. Right now, stand by for news.